As they moved down the trail toward Pueblo, every so often Smoke would have either Cal or Pearly hang back to watch their back trail to make sure none of the outlaws were following them. He wanted to make sure they weren't surprised before they got to the town and told the sheriff what had happened. While he was riding, Smoke found it difficult to keep his eyes off Sally. In spite of the fact that she'd not had a chance to do her hair or bathe while she was a prisoner, and though she was still dressed in the oversized men's clothing the gang had bought for her in Canyon City, he still felt she was the most beautiful woman in the world. It was amazing to him that after all she'd been through the last couple of weeks, she seemed to be none the worse for wear. She still managed to laugh and joke with Cal and Pearly, and in general, acted as if they were out on a trip to see the country instead of fighting for their lives against a band of desperate criminals. When they finally reached the outskirts of Pueblo and rode down along the main street toward the sheriff's office, they attracted stares from almost everyone they passed on the way. The group finally made it to the sheriff's. When they entered the door, they found a tall, lean man with a handlebar mustache sitting at a scarred wooden desk with his feet up on the corner. He was leaned back in his desk chair and had a cup of steaming coffee cradled in his hands. A handmade sign on the desk informed him he was Sheriff John Ashby. When Ashby saw Sally enter with the men, he immediately got to his feet and tipped his hat, a weather-beaten black Stetson.
Morning, ma'am. Gents.
Sheriff Ashby, we've come to report some killings up along Fountain Creek.
Before we get down to business, I got some hot coffee brewing on the stove over yonder. You folks can help yourselves if you'd mind to.
Once they all had mugs in their hands and had taken seats in front of his desk, Ashby crossed his legs and sat back in his chair.
Now, you want to tell me all about it?
Smoke started at the beginning and told the sheriff how a band of men from Texas had gone to his ranch, killed two of his hands, and kidnapped Sally.
They mistreat you any, ma'am?
No, not really, other than keeping me tied up at all times. They did nothing to harm me in any way.
Ashby's eyes went back to Smoke, who then told him about how he figured it was a revenge motive by Pike and Thompson for what he'd done years before in Idaho.
What'd you say your name was?
I didn't say, but it's Smoke Jensen. This is my wife, Sally, and my friends Cal and Pearly.
The Smoke Jensen?
I'm the only one I know of.
Last I heard, you was living over near Big Rock. Settling down, living the quiet life.
That's where my ranch is. And my life was quiet until Pike and his men interfered in it.
Now, you say there was about 10 or so of them.
That's right, Sheriff. Though their numbers are considerably less now.
Oh?
Yes. I killed a couple of them a few days ago on the trail, and I figure we got another 2 or 3 this morning.
That still leaves 5 or 6 to deal with, then.
I guess that's about right.
Let me get some deputies together, and you can show me where all this took place.
Before you do that, Sheriff, my wife would like to clean up a bit, and we all need something to eat. Can you give us a couple of hours?
Why, sure. It'll take that long to find some men to deputize to go with us anyway. We'll meet back here in 2 hours, all right?
After they left the sheriff's office, Smoke asked Cal and Pearly to get him rooms in the hotel while he and Sally made a couple of stops. He and Sally went first to the local general store, since the town of Pueblo didn't have a woman's dress shop. And there, Sally picked out some clothes that fit her better than the ones the gang had bought. She bought some pants, boots, and several shirts that were in her size, along with a fur-lined leather coat. After that, Smoke took her to the local gunsmith store down the street. After browsing for a few moments, Sally picked out a Smith & Wesson 36 caliber short-barreled pistol and a gun belt and holster in a small size for her tiny waist. Though Sally could shoot a .44 as well as any man Smoke knew, she preferred the 36 caliber with its lighter recoil. When they got to the hotel, Smoke arranged for a hot bath for the two of them. Once the boy working for the hotel had the large tub filled with steaming hot water, Smoke shut the door and braced it closed by putting the back of the chair under the doorknob. When he turned around, Sally was already undressed and slipping into the tub. Smoke had started to take a seat in a nearby chair to wait for Sally to finish, when she smiled at him.
This tub seems big enough for two, Smoke.
Smoke did not need a second invitation. He shucked out of his buckskins and joined her, taking a long-handled brush off the wall as he walked to the tub. For the next 20 minutes, they took turns scrubbing the trail dirt off each other and generally getting reacquainted after their long absence from each other. When the scrubbing threatened to lead to more serious play, Sally stopped him with a smile.
Why don't you wait until tonight, darling? It's been a long time since we stayed in a hotel together.
Disappointed, but looking forward to the upcoming evening, Smoke got out of the tub and then helped Sally out. She dressed in her new clothes and they went down the corridor to find Cal and Pearlie's room. There was a note on the door that read,
"Couldn't wait. We're in the hotel dining room."
When they got to the dining room, they found him at a table for four, with enough food in front of Pearlie to serve three people.
I see you didn't waste any time finding the grub.
I told the cook to put on a few more steaks for you two. I didn't know how long you were going to be, so I just told him to get them ready and keep them warm until you showed up.
Sheriff Ashby showed up just as the last bit of steak was consumed, and he raised his eyebrows at Sally's new look. When she stood up from the table and he saw the pistol tied down low on her hip, he glanced at Smoke.
Is Mrs. Jensen gonna go with her?
You want to try and stop her? You're welcome to try.
She know how to use that?
Probably better than you, Sheriff.
He's right, Sheriff.
Then let's shag our mounts. I've got four men ready to ride up there with us. Check the place out.
Bill Pike led his men down the mountain, making sure to stay well off the trail that Smoke Jensen had booby-trapped. It was very slow going with the snow drifts halfway up their mounts' legs in some areas, and they had to be careful not to let their horses break a leg on stones or gopher holes covered by the thick blanket of snow and ice that was everywhere. As he rode, Pike looked back at his motley crew of men, ravaged by the encounter with Smoke Jensen and his men. Hank Snow rode hunched over, his wounded left arm covered with a bandage made out of a couple of bandanas tied together. Zeke Thompson was wearing his usual scowl, still wearing the clothes with holes in them from buckshot Smoke had peppered him with. Resting in his shirt pocket, he had the balls he'd pried out of his skin with his skinning knife. Sergeant Joe Rutledge was riding cocked over to one side, favoring his right flank, keeping his right arm pressed tight against it to stop the bleeding. Blackie Johnson was nursing a bottle of whiskey to stop the throbbing in his swollen jaw and to ease the pain of his broken and missing teeth. Pike shook his head. All in all, he'd made the one mistake he'd tried to avoid, underestimating Smoke Jensen. Well, that was one error he wasn't about to make twice. His plan was to circle around Pueblo and head back to Canyon City. There, he would use some of the $10,000 Jensen had thrown in his face. He would hire more men for his next foray against the Mountain Man. And this time, he would make sure to plant the bastard forked end up. Lost in his thoughts of revenge and death, Pike almost didn't hear the hoofbeats of the men riding up the trail in front of him. When he realized there were riders coming, he raised his hand and motioned for his men to move further into the brush, out of sight and hearing of the trail. From deep in the forest, Pike could barely make out a band of eight or nine men, heavily armed, riding up the trail toward the clearing they'd just left. That son of a bitch Jensen had gotten the sheriff of Pueblo and he'd brought a posse up the mountain after him and his men.
Spur them mounts, boys, because Johnny Law's going to be on our tracks for long. We better be shut of this place by then.
I don't know if I can ride any faster, boss. My side's about to kill me.
Then I'll leave your worthless ass behind and let Jensen finish what he started.
Rutledge and the others gritted their teeth and followed, all of them wincing at the pain the faster pace caused to their wounds. Smoke led the posse, along with Cal and Pearlie and Sally, up the trail toward the clearing. He was riding point so he could help the men avoid the traps he'd set for Pike and his men. As they came to the pits, he would have Cal and Pearlie take out the stakes and fill in the holes, He didn't want anyone else inadvertently injuring themselves or their horses in the traps he'd laid for Pike and his men. He also clipped the barbed wire off the trees as they passed, so innocent miners or trappers wouldn't be injured. Sheriff Ashby raised his eyebrows when he saw what Smoke had done to prevent their being followed.
Looks like you played pretty rough, Jensen.
Man takes my wife and kills my hand, Sheriff. He deserves whatever happens to him.
A few hundred yards farther along, just past a bend in the trail, a posse came upon a man sprawled on his back, his head torn off, and lying 10 yards from his body. Further up the trail was a dead horse lying over one of the pits, its front legs and its neck broken.
The clearing is just up the ways a bit.
When they arrived opposite the clearing, Smoke led them across Fountain Creek to the side of the gunfight. The posse spread out and moved about the clearing and up the slopes around it, checking for bodies. Sheriff Ashby shook his head at the scattered body parts lying around the area.
Like I said before, when you go after somebody, you do it in a serious way.
Smoke was standing in the center of the clearing, his hands on his hips, staring down at the place where he'd left Pike's body.
Looks like the ringleader got away.
But I shot him full in the stomach.
Well, I don't see any blood here where he was lying, Sally. If he got gut shot, he should have leaked some blood here and there.
Maybe you missed, Mrs. Jensen.
No. She hit him dead center and knocked him off his feet. The only thing I can figure is something must have deflected the bullet. Either the gun he took from me and stuck in his belt or his belt buckle. Either way, he took the money I left and what was left of his gang and hightailed it somewhere else.
Pearly, who'd been searching the area for tracks, found where the outlaws had left the trail and headed down the mountain.
Smoke! Here's their tracks!
Smoke and the rest of the posse rode back across the creek and found the place where Pike and his men had left the trail and taken to the brush. It was right next to where the headless outlaw's body was lying.
I guess after they lost this man to one of your traps, they decided the trail was not a healthy place to ride.
Smoke got down off his horse and knelt in the snow, examining the horse's tracks.
It looks like 4 or 5 horses, Sheriff. Headed back down the mountain towards Pueblo.
Damn! We'd better hightail it back down there.
Smoke took off down the trail, riding hard, followed by Cal and Pearly and Sally. After a moment of hesitation, the sheriff grinned.
What the hell? Let's go, boys!
When they got to a fork in the trail just outside the city limits of Pueblo, Smoke saw tracks coming out of the brush, going off on the side trail toward Canyon City. He reined his horse to a halt and sat staring down the trail. When the sheriff and his posse arrived a couple of minutes later, Smoke pointed at the tracks.
Looks like Pike and his men headed back towards Canyon City instead of into Pueblo, Sheriff.
I don't have any jurisdiction in Canyon City, Jensen. The county line is about a mile up that trail. Past that, it's the sheriff in Canyon City's problem.
Can you wire him to be on the lookout for them, Sheriff?
I can if the wire's not down. Usually it goes down after the first heavy snowfall and we don't bother to put it back up until spring.
Well, I don't intend to chase them any further right now. Me and my friends are going to ride back up the trail and take care of some traps we set between the clearing back there and the outlaw's old camp. After that, I'm going back to Pueblo. Have a good dinner, get a good night's sleep, and worry about those bastards tomorrow.
Yeah, part about the good dinner sure sounds good to me.
You might also want to consider a bath and a change of clothes while we're there, Pearly.
Change my clothes? Heck, I've only been wearing these for a week now. They ain't hardly used at all.
When they arrived at the town of Pueblo, the sheriff dismissed his posse and turned to Smoke.
Mr. Jensen, I don't know much about this Bill Pike who started this vendetta against you. But if he did all this to get back at you for something you did 10 or 15 years ago, then he must be a mighty determined fella.
I guess you could say that, Sheriff.
I don't have either the manpower or the budget to post guards around your hotel tonight. But if I was you, I'd sleep with one eye open. Even though Pike's tracks seem to head toward Canyon City, he might just decide to double back and try and finish what he started while you and your friends are here in Pueblo.
Point taken, Sheriff. Believe me, we're going to be very careful until we get back home, or I plant Pike and his men 6 feet down.
Well, even under the circumstances, it was nice to meet you, Jensen. I've been hearing about you for some time, and I must say, the stories I heard weren't exaggerated.
Thanks, Sheriff. We'll check in with you before we leave in the morning.
Good night, Jensen. Ma'am,
Come on, let's get these mounts to delivery so we can get to the hotel and get some dinner and then some shut-eye.
After stabling their horses, the group went to the hotel's dining room. When the waiter came to their table and saw Pearlie, he broke out in a wide grin.
I hope your appetite is good, sir. I have a bet with the cook. He says you can't possibly eat as much for supper as you did this morning for lunch.
How much did you wager?
My tip, sir. And since you and your friends are so generous, it amounts to a lot of money for me.
Well, son, bring on the grub, because I got a powerful appetite that needs fixing.
Yes, sir. And for the rest of you?
He's right. Just keep on bringing out the food until we say we've had enough. And son, don't cook those steaks too much. Just tell the cook to throw them on the fire until they quit moving and then bring them out here.
When they were done with dinner, Smoke left the happy waiter a large tip so he could win more money. When Smoke and Sally got to their room and began to undress, Smoke saw Sally digging into the valise she'd bought that morning.
What are you doing, dear?
Why, I'm looking for the nightgown I bought this morning when we were shopping for my new clothes.
Never mind. You won't be needing a nightgown to keep you warm tonight. I intend to do that all by myself.
Are you sure you're up to it, sir? After all, you've been through a lot lately.
Oh, I think I can manage.
Yes, I can see that you're up to it after all, darling.
In the morning, Smoke and Sally were up early and dressed, just as dawn was breaking. They walked down the stairs arm in arm, intending to get breakfast before the boys woke up. As they moved through the lobby, Smoke was surprised to find a bleary-eyed Pearlie sitting in a large chair, his Winchester across his thighs, facing the front door. He and Sally looked at each other, and then they moved over to stand next to Pearlie's chair.
Pearlie, what are you doing here?
Well, Cal and I wanted to make sure nobody disturbed you two. Like the sheriff said last night, there's no telling what that Pike filler might be up to.
Did you sit there all night?
Well, no, ma'am. Me and Cal split the night up. Each of us took 4-hour shifts.
Go on up and get Cal. It's time to eat.
You don't have to tell me twice.
After skirting the town of Pueblo, Pike and his men pushed their mounts as fast as they could toward Canyon City. He knew Smoke and whoever had been helping him would probably go to the sheriff in Pueblo and then come after him, but he didn't know if they would push the chase all the way to Canyon City or not. Even so, he didn't plan to underestimate Smoke Jensen ever again, so he made the journey as fast as they could. Blackie Johnson, Hank Snow, Zeke Thompson, and Sergeant Joe Rutledge didn't ask any questions along the way. They all knew the law would soon be on their trail, and they wanted to put as much distance between them and Pueblo as they possibly could. Once they entered the city limits of Canyon City, they slowed their broncs and walked them down the main street, letting them blow a bit after being pushed so hard. Johnson eased his horse up next to Pike's.
What's the plan now, boss? We got the money from Jensen, so now I guess you plan to divide it up and we can all go our separate ways, huh?
You're right, Blackie. We got the money, but we didn't get Jensen, so the job ain't done yet.
Wait a minute, Bill. We didn't sign on this just to kill Jensen. The idea was he was wanted, we went after him in order to get the reward money. Now we got the money, and as far as I'm concerned, the job is over.
Listen to me, you son of a bitch. That bastard Jensen killed Roof and Johnny and Razor and Slim, and he most likely killed and cut up Sam and Billy, too. Now, I don't know about you, but I rode with them boys for a lot of years, and I don't intend to let Jensen go on home without his paying for what he did.
Jesus, Bill, what the hell are you talking about? Jensen killed those boys because we stole his wife and killed two of his hands. What the blazes did you expect him to do? Thank us?
All that don't matter a damn, Blackie. The fact is, Jensen's gonna be made to pay for killing our friends. Now, if you're too lily-livered to go along with that, you're welcome to ride on off. But I ain't dividing up this money till that son of a bitch is in the ground.
Hold on, boys. Try to keep it down, all right? We don't want everybody in Canyon City knowing our business, do we?
Both Pike and Blackie realized this was not the time or the place for a confrontation, especially with the law back in Pueblo possibly on their trail. Hank inclined his head toward a clapboard building just down the street.
Now, there's a saloon just over there. What do you say to getting off these broncs and down a little whiskey to ward the chill off our bones while we discuss it?
Pike and Blackie glared at each other for another moment, until Pike finally nodded and turned his horse up the street. Once they were in the saloon and had downed several stiff drinks, the men finally persuaded Blackie to go along with them on a quest to go after Jensen. Blackie reluctantly agreed, with the provision that they would not attempt to kill Mrs. Jensen.
After all, she didn't do nothing but try to protect herself.
I knew from the way you was hanging around her with your tongue all hanging out, you was getting sweet on her.
That ain't so, Zeke, but she didn't have nothing to do with killing your brothers or any of our friends.
She shot Ruth dead in the heart.
Well, that's my offer. Take it or leave it.
All right. I don't really care what happens to that bitch anyway. It's Denson and the men who helped him shoot up our friends I want to see planted.
Nah, that's settled. What are we going to do about killing Jensen? There's only five of us left, and I don't relish going up against him and his men with just five guns.
Oh, I think we can find some men up here who'll be glad to ride with us for a share of the loot we took off Jensen. Hell, it's a lot easier than trying to dig gold out of these mountains in the winter.
I hope you're not planning on offering them a full share of our money, since they ain't exactly been on this from the start.
It don't matter too much how much we promise them. When it's all over, who's to say they're going to survive the trip anyway?
Blackie tried to hide his displeasure. He'd done a lot of bad things in his young life, but he'd never gone against his partners. Zeke's suggestion made him think about what they might be planning for him once this was all over. He knew one thing. He was going to have to watch his own back in the future.
Just where are you planning on staging this attack on Jensen? On the trail on the way back to his ranch?
Nah, they're going to be on their guard till they get back home. I think it'd be better for us to take a few days off before we head out after them. Let them get good and settled, thinking they're all safe and sound back home before we take them out.
You don't mean for us to hang around here waiting, do you? That sheriff over in Pueblo is bound to get word up here to be on the lookout for us.
No. You're right for once, Blackie. We'll head on down towards Silver Cliff, get us some partners there. As I remember, it's a mite smaller than Canyon City, and it's on the way toward Jensen's ranch. It'll be the perfect place to lay low for a while till we get ready to go after him and his men.
Well, at least we got plenty of money to spend while we're waiting. And I'll just bet there are some women in Silver Cliff who'll be glad to help me get rid of some of it.
After they'd finished eating and gotten their horses packed for the journey back to Big Rock, Smoke and the others stopped by Sheriff Ashby's office.
We're heading back home, Sheriff.
Smoke handed the sheriff a piece of paper.
That's where we live, and the name of our sheriff is Monte Carson. I'd appreciate it if you hear anything about the outlaws. You send me a message, care of the sheriff.
Will do, Mr. Jensen. And if any of the boys head over to Canyon City, I'll send a note to the sheriff over there to also be on the lookout for anyone matching the gang's descriptions. With any luck, they'll be caught before you get back home.
I don't think it'll be that easy, Sheriff. But I do thank you for your trouble and for all the help you've been.
It comes with the badge, Mr. Jensen.
The sheriff turned to Sally and stuck out his hand. She took it.
You held up real well under difficult circumstances, ma'am. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you, Sheriff. I had a good teacher.
As they made their way down south toward home, Smoke decided to take a trail straight through the mountains to avoid going through Canyon City. He didn't want to risk running into the outlaws while he still had Sally with him. This way would take him a couple of days longer, but there was no way the outlaws would know which way they went, so it would be almost impossible for him to set up an ambush along the way. Even so, while they rode, Smoke took turns with the boys riding point ahead of the group, just in case there was trouble. Sometime later, when they finally arrived in Big Rock, they were surprised to see that the town was almost deserted, the streets practically devoid of citizens.
That's strange. I wonder where everyone is today.
Smoke, could we stop at the Undertaker's? I want to see where Sam and Will are buried.
Certainly, dear.
They had the Undertaker show them the graves of their two hired hands, buried while they were gone. They all stood around the still fresh graves, and Sally led them in a prayer for their departed friends. She then arranged with the Undertaker to have fresh flowers kept on their graves in season, and she paid him to carve granite headstones for their resting place with their names and the date of their deaths on it. Afterwards, Smoke suggested they stop at Monte Carson's office to let him know Sally was all right and that the Sheriff of Pueblo might be wiring him with news of the outlaws. They found Sheriff Carson in his usual spot, behind his desk with his feet up on the corner and a steaming cup of coffee in his hand. When they entered, he jumped to his feet and immediately gave Sally a big hug.
Damn, but it's good to see you're all right.
Smoke smiled at the sheriff. He knew that Sally was everyone in town's best friend, and that the townspeople would be as relieved and as happy as Monty to see that she had survived her ordeal intact and unharmed. After he finished hugging Sally, Monty shook hands with Cal and Pearlie and Smoke, telling them all how glad he was to see him back.
I can't hardly wait to hear the story of how you got Sally away from them desperados.
Well, we've been on the trail for several days now. Why don't we go on over to Longmont's and get some food under our belts, and we'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, I'm sure Lewis would like to say hello, too.
Smoke, I'm really not too hungry just now. Why don't I go on over to the hotel and make arrangements for us to stay there while you and the sheriff visit Lewis?
Hotel? Why are you going to stay there?
Why, don't you remember, Monty? Our cabin was burned to the ground by the outlaws.
Well, Sally, first of all, Lewis ain't at his place right now.
I've been meaning to ask you, Monty, where is everyone? Town looks deserted.
Most of them are off working on something right now.
When he saw by their expressions, his explanation really didn't answer Smoke's question. He leaned over and finished off his cup of coffee in one long gulp.
I tell you what, let's go on out to the Sugarloaf and then we'll talk.
All right, Monty.
Hold on a minute. I thought we were going to eat first.
Pearlie, just this once, will you forget about your stomach for a while?
All right, but if I starve to death before we find some grub, you can just plant me out on a Sugarloaf somewheres. No need to buy me a fancy headstone. Just put a batch of Miss Sally's bear sign in my casket and I'll be happy.
On the way out to the Sugarloaf, Monte Carson refused to answer any more questions from the group, telling them it would all be clear to them once they got to the ranch. As they rode up the final mile toward where their cabin used to be, Smoke saw dozens of buckboards and wagons and about 30 horses milling around their corral. When they turned the final bend before arriving at the cabin, they saw most of the townspeople they'd come to call their friends busily engaged in building them a new house. Men and boys swarmed around the place on ladders and up on the roof, putting the final touches to a large, well-appointed log cabin with two stories on it instead of the original one. The women of the town were busy cooking food and serving hot coffee and hot chocolate to the workers and fetching kegs of nails and spikes that were being driven into the walls. Three large wagons stood off to one side, filled with furniture, drapes, and even three trunks of clothes. Sally put her hands to her mouth as her eyes filled with tears.
Oh, Monty, this is so wonderful.
Lewis Longmont, his sleeves rolled up and minus his usual trademark fancy coat, wiped his hands off on a rag and walked over to meet him.
Howdy, folks. We'd hoped to be finished before you got back, but we're awfully glad to see Sally's all right anyway.
Smoke jumped down off Joker and walked over to embrace his friend.
Lewis, I can't believe you all have done this.
Why not, partner? After all you and Sally have done for the town, we figured it was time to pay you back a little bit.
I'm overwhelmed.
Well, come on in and let me show you around your new home.
As they walked forward, the townspeople all stopped their work and smiled their hellos, the women rushing over to see how Sally was and to make her promise to tell them the whole story later. Pearlie made a straight beeline for the table that was spread with fried chicken, steaks, rolls, corn, and just about every kind of pie he'd ever heard of. For Pearlie, sentimentality always came second to hunger. By nightfall, all of the furniture and clothes were in the house, and it was complete, except for some minor things that Lewis promised would be fixed within the week. Seeing how tired Smoke and Sally were from their long trip, everyone finally left for town, with promises to come back out to the house later in the week for a housewarming party. Once they were alone, Smoke and Sally walked around their new home. Smoke, stopping to admire the brand new handmade gun cabinet that the owner of the local gun shop had filled with new rifles, shotguns, and pistols to replace those Smoke had lost in the fire.
It's good to be home, dear.
Yes, it is.
Sally took his hand and led him into the bedroom. She stood before the large double bed and handcrafted quilt that was covering it, thinking how comfortable it looked.
I think it's about time we tried out that new bed the town folk gave us.
Tired?
Not that tired. I said try it out, not go to sleep.
Bill Pike and his men spent almost 2 weeks hanging around Silver Cliff, drinking, carousing, and getting to know some of the local toughs. Even with the inflated prices of a mining town, they couldn't manage to make a small dent in the $10,000 Smoke had left for them. Finally, Pike chose 5 men to make an offer to. 4 accepted, 1 declined, not wanting to make the long journey to Big Rock no matter how much money Pike offered. It took him another day to find a 5th man to join their group, and they headed out to make their way south toward Big Rock and Smoke Jensen. On the way, Pike avoided even the smallest towns in order to keep any word of their approach from getting back to Jensen. The men grumbled about having to camp out in the frigid weather, but Pike reminded them they were being well paid to do just that. By the time they got to the outskirts of Big Rock, they were tired, half frozen, and in need of more supplies, especially whiskey. Pike decided to send one of the new men into town, figuring Jensen and his men hadn't seen his face, so it would be safe for him to go for what they needed. He sent a man named Cutter Williams, so named because of his penchant for slicing up anyone who disagreed with him with his 12-inch Arkansas toothpick knife. He had bright red, almost orange hair and a full beard, grown to cover a couple of jagged scars on his face from old knife fights. Williams rode into town with a list of needed supplies in his saddlebags and with orders to go directly to the general store and buy the goods and get the hell out of town without talking to anyone. Williams intended to do just that until his horse came abreast of Longmont Saloon, where the delicious aroma of frying steaks and liquor changed his mind.
What the hell? Nobody in this town knows me, so it ought to be safe enough. Besides, what Pike don't know won't hurt him.
He tied his horse to the hitching rail in front of the saloon and swaggered inside, moving immediately to the bar area. When he cocked his foot up on the brass rail running along the bottom of the bar, Lewis Longmont, who was sitting at his usual table having his morning coffee and cigar, noticed the handle of the wicked-looking blade in Williams' boot. Lewis's experienced eyes also took in the way Williams wore his Colt pistol tied down low on his thigh, a sure sign the man wasn't a straight cowboy stopping for a quick drink before returning to the herd. Though Big Rock occasionally had such men passing through, Lewis was on alert because of the continued threat of the men that had kidnapped Sally. He discussed the possibility of them coming after Smoke and the others, but this man didn't fit the description of any of the outlaws Smoke had given him. Still, better to be safe than sorry. Anything out of the ordinary needed to be checked out. He sat there sipping his coffee and letting the smoke from his cigar curl up to be scattered by the wind through the windows and door, and he watched the man at the bar. After the redhead downed 2 quick whiskeys, he took his glass and moved to a table next to Lewis's. When the waiter came over, he ordered a large steak, fried potatoes, and sliced peaches. As he sat back and sipped his 3rd whiskey, Lewis looked over to him and forced his face into a friendly smile.
Howdy, mister.
Williams looked at him suspiciously and slowly nodded back, the barest hint of a smile on his ugly face.
I'm the owner of this establishment. I notice you're new in town, and if you need it, I can recommend a good place to stay the night. And I can also tell you who's hiring hands in the area if you're looking for a job.
I ain't planning on staying, mister, if it's any of your concern. I'm just passing through.
Oh, well then, enjoy your meal, and I'm sorry I bothered you.
Lewis raised his hand to the waiter and signaled for him to bring the man another drink.
Have a drink on me for the intrusion.
When the waiter poured the man another whiskey, his expression softened.
Hey, mister. Thanks for the drink. I didn't mean to be ornery. It's just I've been on the trail a long time and I ain't used to talking to other people much.
Yeah, that's all right. You come from up north?
Yeah, I was mining up in the Rockies till it got too cold. Man offered me a job down here and I took it. Anything to get out of the mountains in the winter.
Lewis figured he'd press the man all he could without raising his suspicions. So he just nodded and went back to his coffee and cigar. After Williams finished his meal, he got up and walked unsteadily out the bat wings. Lewis watched him get on his horse and head down the street toward the general store. Lewis was still watching 30 minutes later when the man came out with a large burlap sack filled with supplies and headed back out of town the way he'd come in. Once he was out of sight, Lewis walked over to the general store and went inside. Ed and Peg Jackson, the owners, were busy stacking shelves with goods that had just come in from Colorado Springs by wagon.
Hey, Lewis, you in need of some supplies for your restaurant? We just got some tins of tomatoes and peaches. It'll get you through the winter.
No, Ed, that's not why I'm here this time.
What can I do for you, Lewis?
I'm interested in that red-headed man that was just in here, and I was wondering just what he bought.
Any particular reason?
It's probably nothing, but Smoke asked me to be on the lookout for any strangers that came to town, just in case those men who kidnapped Sally wanted another chance at him.
Now let me see.
Ed told Lewis about all the things the man had bought.
That's strange. It sounds like he bought enough supplies for 8 or 10 men, and he told me he was traveling alone.
Well, that doesn't sound right, Lewis. There's no way a single man can eat all the food he bought. It'd go bad before he could finish half of it.
That's what I thought. Maybe I'd better take a ride on out to the Sugarloaf and tell Smoke about this.
You need any help?
Nah, Ed, but thanks anyway. I may just be jumping to conclusions. No need to get too worried just yet.
Lewis got his horse out of the livery stable and rode as fast as he could out to Smoke's ranch. When he got there, Sally immediately offered him breakfast.
No thanks, Sally. I've already eaten.
Then how about a cup of coffee and some of my bear sign?
Now that I could go for. Sally, is Smoke around?
Yes. He and Cal and Pearlie are out in the front pasture working on some fences that need mending.
Maybe I'd better go get him. There's something I need to talk to you two about.
No need for that, Lewis. Keep your seat.
Sally walked out on the front porch and rang a large bell hanging there. She came back in.
He'll be here in a few minutes. He put that bell out there so I could call him if I needed anything, or if anyone showed up who looked suspicious.
Sure enough, it wasn't 5 minutes before Smoke and Cal and Pearlie came walking in.
Howdy, Lewis.
Lewis here has something he says he needs to talk to us about. And since the bear sign just came out of the oven, I thought you boys might like a break from working on that fence.
Did you say bear sign?
Sally put the platter on the table.
Dig in, men, while I pour some coffee all around.
Well?
Between bites, Lewis filled him in on what he'd seen in town and his suspicions about the red-headed stranger.
It may be nothing, but I thought you two ought to know about it.
You did right, Lewis. I don't believe in coincidence when it comes to pond scum like Bill Pike.
But Smoke, there were no redheads in that gang.
That means Pike has gotten some men to replace those we killed, Pearlie. So there's no telling how many men we're going up against.
What do you want to do about it, Smoke? You know you can count on my guns, as well as any you need from town.
There's no time for that, Lewis. If Pike is out there, he'll probably hit us tonight. That doesn't leave us enough time to go down to town and round up any help.
So what's your plan?
First of all, I'm going to send the rest of the hands into town. They're not gunfighters, and I don't want any more innocent men to die out here. And I'd like you to go in town too, sweetheart.
No, sir. Not on your life, Smoke. I can handle a gun as well as most men, and I don't intend to run away to town and leave you here to face those men by yourself.
But...
We are not going to argue about this, Smoke. My place is here, with you, and that's final.
I think you're outgunned on this one, Smoke.
I think you're right, Lewis. It's easier to throw a bull in heat than to change a woman's mind once it's made up.
I'm glad you all agree. Now, what are we going to do?
Cal, you round up the hands and send them into town. Tell them once they get there to tell Monte Carson what's going on. I doubt he can get here before morning. But in case they don't make their move tonight, we'll have some backup for them when they do.
Yes, sir.
What else, Smoke?
First of all, Sally's going to make us lots of coffee and food in case we come under siege. And then we're going to shut this house up tighter than a drum. As soon as it gets dark, we're going to leave one man here with Sally, and the rest of us are going to spread out around the house and the woods and wait. When and if they come, we'll be ready for them.
As dusk approached, Smoke had Pearlie take the horses up to a corral in a distant pasture to get him out of harm's way. And he closed up the house, closing all the shutters and placing rifles and shotguns next to him, along with plenty of extra ammunition. Once that was done, he got an old Indian bow and quiver out of the bunkhouse that Cal had been trying to learn to use. Smoke strapped the quiver on his back.
What you want that old thing for? Don't a rifle or shotgun work better?
Not if you need to dispatch someone quietly, and they're too far away to use a knife.
Smoke stationed Cal in the house with Sally after pulling him to the side and telling him to make sure she didn't get hurt.
Only way they'll get to Sally, Smoke, is over my dead body.
Smoke then told Pearlie and Lewis to take everything off and in their clothes that might make any noise.
Remember, sound carries a long way in cold night air. The smallest clink or scrape might give your position away.
Taking his advice, Pearlie and Lewis removed all bits of metal from their clothes and tied down their holsters tight so they wouldn't slap against their thighs when they moved or get caught on any branches in the brush. As a final measure, Smoke got out a tin of boot black, and they each smeared it on all parts of their exposed skin, making them nearly invisible in the darkness. When they got ready to head out into the night, Sally gave each of them a canteen filled with steaming coffee, a bag of steak sandwiches, and a couple of bear sign to help ward off the chill of the night.
One thing we've got going for us is that the moon is hidden by those snow clouds. It's going to be darker than a prostitute's heart out there tonight.
Yep, and colder than the well digger's belt buckle.
After she closed and locked the door behind them, Sally went around the house, turning down all the lanterns so there was just enough light to see to move, but not enough to make them a target from outside. Pike and his men moved across the nearby pastures toward the ranch house. When he saw the large house silhouetted against the night sky, Pike was surprised. Since they'd burned the cabin down when they were here before, he figured Smoke and his family would be living out of the bunkhouse. He couldn't believe the cabin had been rebuilt so fast.
Hey, boss, the house looks dark. Maybe they're not there.
Pike put his binoculars to his eyes, and he didn't like what he saw. The windows were all covered, with only small points of dim light visible in them.
There they are, all right. They just got the place buttoned up tight, like maybe they're expecting us.
But Bill, there's no way they could have known we was coming tonight.
Yeah, well, don't count on it. You men split up and circle around the house. We'll just have to come at it from all sides and hope we can get close enough to set it afire and burn them out.
Blackie Johnson did not like the sound of that.
Remember, Bill, you said we weren't going to kill the woman.
Not on purpose, Blackie. But if she's in there and comes out shooting, then I can't be responsible for what the men do.
Lying son of a bitch.
Smoke was squatting on his haunches, leaning back against a tall pine tree, when he heard the soft sound of horses' hooves crunching through nearby snow. He slowly stood up, keeping his back up against the tree, and fitted an arrow into his bow. When he saw a dark figure leaning over the neck of a horse walking through the forest, he drew the bowstring back and took careful aim. Smoke dove to the ground and rolled, feeling his shirt pelted by buckshot, but the range was too far for the slugs to do any real damage. When Smoke rolled up onto his knees, his Colt was in his hand. Circling around, Smoke eased his way toward the man he'd shot to make sure he was dead and not just wounded. He eased around the tree and saw the man, dark blood staining his right shoulder, trying to reload his shotgun. Smoke didn't hesitate. Pearlie jumped when he heard the shotgun go off over to his right, and he felt his heart begin to beat rapidly. This was it. They were out there, and they were on the move. He eased the hammer back on his express gun, having chosen it because of the difficulty of aiming a rifle in the darkness. Suddenly, the faint light of the night sky was obscured by the shadows of two men moving past him in the darkness. A slight twinkle of light showed him that they had their guns out and were moving toward the house. Pearly, not quite as bloodthirsty as Smoke, felt he ought to give the men a chance to give themselves up.
Drop them weapons!
Instead of lowering their guns, the men turned toward him. As he moved past them, the coppery smell of blood and the acrid odor of cordite filled his nostrils. Before he could reload, a man on horseback charged him. Pearly dropped the shotgun and drew his pistol in one quick motion.
Towards the house!
Zeke Thompson bent over against the wind and struck a lucifer on his pants leg, and then he held it to the torch he was carrying. He was gonna burn that bastard Smoke Jensen out of his house. Just as he started to put the spurs to his mount, a man stepped out in front of him, his teeth gleaming whitely in the gentle light from the sky.
Don't you know a grown man shouldn't play with fire?
Why, you... Ow! Oh, son of a bitch!
You leave my mother out of this.
Just as the moon came out from behind the clouds, Cutter Williams lit his torch and spurred his mount toward the house.
Burn the bastards out!
Blackie Johnson, outraged by this tactic, which would surely mean the death of Mrs. Jensen, kicked his horse forward after Williams. When he saw he couldn't catch him, Blackie drew his pistol. Sally, in the house and fixing to shoot Williams, saw what Blackie did and a small smile creased her lips. She knew damn well he wasn't as bad as the others, and she lowered her rifle. Just then, Bill Pike and Sergeant Joe Rutledge rode out of the forest toward the house, each carrying torches. When Pike saw what Blackie did, he aimed his pistol at him. Rutledge was almost to the front porch when the door opened and Cal stepped out, his hands full of iron.
Hell with this!
Pike jerked his reins around and galloped across the pasture away from the house. Smoke ran out of the woods and over to the porch to kneel beside Cal. Cal was doubled over, his hands pressed against his side, trying to stop the flow of blood from a wound in his flank.
Sally, get me a hot iron.
Just as Sally appeared on the porch with the iron, Pearly and Lewis came running out of the woods. Lewis stood on the porch facing outward in case of another attack, both hands filled with Colts. Pearly squatted down next to Cal.
Damn it, Cal! You just can't seem to join in a fight without getting shot up.
I didn't want to disappoint you, partner.
As Sally bent over and Smoke pulled the shirt back to expose the wound, Pearly took a bear sign out of his sack.
Here, pal, chomp on this. It'll help ease the pain.
Sally, who'd been through this many times with Smoke, put the red-hot end of the poker against the bleeding hole.
Hold the fort, boys. I'm going after the bastard.
Smoke took a running jump, vaulted up on the back of Rutledge's horse, and took off after Pike.
Pearly, would you go and check on that man lying over there?
Sally indicated the place where Blackie Johnson had fallen.
That man helped save us tonight.
Pearly nodded and walked over to check on Blackie Johnson and see if he was still alive. It took Smoke almost 5 miles to catch up to Pike. As Smoke neared the man's horse, Pike reached back and took several shots at Smoke with his pistol, just narrowly missing him a couple of times. When his gun was empty, he threw that at Smoke, also missing his mark. Smoke pulled his horse up next to Pike's and dove across the mount. When they both stopped rolling and tumbling across the snow, each man got to his feet, facing the other. Pike jerked a long, thin knife from his boot and crouched in the typical knife fighter's stance. Smoke bared his teeth in a savage grin, pulling out his bowie knife and beginning to circle the other man. Suddenly, Pike dropped his knife and stood up straight.
All right, Jensen, you got me. I give up.
No, Pike, you don't get off that easy. I'm gonna cut you into little pieces, knife or no knife.
But you can't kill an unarmed man!
Then arm yourself, you coward!
Reluctantly, Pike picked up his knife and moved quickly toward Smoke, slashing wildly back and forth. Smoke leaned to the side, Pike's knife so close to him that it sliced through his shirt. Smoke made a lightning quick move with his hand, and his bowie knife cut the tendons in Pike's right hand down to the bone, causing him to drop the knife.
All right, I'm done.
Pick up the knife, Pike.
No!
You ever seen a man scalped alive, Pike? It's not a pretty sight.
You wouldn't...
Remember your two men in the mountains, Pike. That's how you're gonna look in a few minutes.
Pike grabbed the knife off the ground with his left hand and ran at Smoke. Smoke stepped to the side as Pike passed, and he backhanded him across the throat with the edge of his bowie knife.
And I'm gonna sit here and watch you drown on your own blood, little bastard.
Pike's eyes were terrified, and his last thoughts were that he wished he'd never heard of Smoke Jensen, the mountain man. When Smoke got back to the cabin, he found Cal inside on their bed and another man lying on their couch.
How's Cal?
He's going to be fine. The bullet tore a chunk of fat off his flank, but it didn't enter the abdomen. He'll be back at work within a week.
Smoke turned his attention to the other man.
Smoke, this is Blackie Johnson. When I was being held prisoner, he treated me with respect. And tonight, he helped to save our new house.
How are his wounds?
Lewis looked up from bandaging Johnson's wounds.
He took one in the ribs, but it didn't hit the lung. I think he's gonna be all right.
Smoke walked over to address the man on the couch.
Mr. Johnson, my wife is a pretty good judge of character. If she thinks you're worth saving, then I'm not inclined to argue. You can stay here until your wounds are healed, and then you'll be free to go.
Blackie's eyes shifted from Smoke to Sally, and he tried to smile, though the pain caused it to be more of a grimace.
Thank you kindly, ma'am.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man number 29, Trek of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2001, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2011, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by James Lewis, Tim Getman, Elizabeth Jernigan, Drew Kopis, Tim Carlin, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Ken Jackson, Thomas Keegan, Kimberly Gilbert, Thomas Penny, Christopher Sheeran, Terrence Aselford, and Joe Brack. Directed by Johan Detweil. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and the Smoke Jensen theme music by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed Trek of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
What's up?
I've got a case. I need you, Danny.
She pushed the file toward me. There were homicide Lay's photos. Gods above, when was this?
4 months ago. Look past the body.
My eyes moved over the picture. A pile of something wrinkled laid off to one side.
Is that what I think? Oh, don't tell me it is. The fucker flayed her.
Remember! 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 No!
I don't want to remember Rigger Hall. I have done very well for years without remembering.
Welcome to the House of Pain.
Have a nice night.
It is extremely unlikely.
Rigger Hall. I swore I'd never go back.
Dante Valentine, Book 2, Dead Man Rising, Part 1, is available now in graphic audio.
Remember Rigger Hall.
Graphic Audio presents E.E. Knight's Vampire Earth.
Gate coach, is that what you want? There's a spare backdoor key.
I don't want access to Weathercut. I wanted you out of it, Franklin.
But I'm nobody important. I don't even have my own room.
That's the problem with being a nobody important. Somebody might decide you're disposable. Kind of like that teenage girl back in Arkansas. The one you, Bernardo Gutierrez, Tom Cray, and Sergeant Heath Hopkins raped and then killed.
No! I mean, you got the wrong guy!
No! No! No!
What kind of op is this?
We're clearing this housing complex. D-O-E-R.
Of what?
Destruction of enemy resources. You can't stand to actually see a doer?
Enemy resources? You mean the population?
Without a population to feed on, the Kurians pull out.
No objections, I hope.
Objections? Hell yes! For starters...
Hop off your high horse, Valentine. Clearing operations work. Your old man invented him, after all.
He's hot. Sir, is he entering up as a bear?
No. I simply opened the channels. He shouldn't have the biological resource. Wait. Design, help us. I forgot. Oh, me. Your father was a bear, I believe.
I think so.
You may have had the talent passed down to you.
We better isolate.
Oh, and he needs calm now more than anything. Oh, me. I've been a fool, careless. I expect he'll go mad.
You, at the other end. Talk, or I make your puppet into a corn dog. Stop it.
What do you want?
Are you Seattle? The head honcho?
No, I am but a keeper.
I want to talk to your chief. King, grand and exalted overlord, whatever he calls himself. The one in the big tower. Tell him I have an offer.
What could a human give such as he?
Adler, the leader of the resistance.
Vampire Earth, Book 6, Valentine's Resolve. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.